flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 7:06. You are listening to News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. It is not a drill. This is not a test. It is Sunday night, and I am here. It's Shaletta Brundage, host of the Shaletta Show from noon to 3 every Saturday. I am here until 9, hanging out with my brother, Jonathan Lowe. Hey, Jonathan.
Evening. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I cannot wait to talk college basketball with you. My University of Houston Cougars are doing well, seated well, and so you're going to give me the scoop on all that. We've got an amazing 2 hours. Thank you so much for lining up this show tonight. And, you know, it is Women's History Month. You've been hearing all about it. And a lot of times when we talk Women's History Month, we take a look back. You know, and we talk about people like Madam C.J. Walker, who was the first female millionaire in the United States of America who was self-made. We talk about locally Dr. Josie Johnson, the mother of Minnesota's civil rights movement, Nellie Stone Johnson. But what about the women who are making history today, who are doing amazing things right before our eyes? You know, I don't want us to wait until somebody is gone on to glory before we say, you know what? I see what you're doing. Amazing. Don't wait till I'm dead to name no streets after me. I promise I'm going to haunt you. Don't wait until I'm gone and my children are dead before you put my face on the stamp. If you're going to honor me, do it right now in real time so I can see it, enjoy it, and appreciate it. And so when I saw the work that Colette Campbell was doing at Bremer Bank and the big promotion that she got, I was like, oh, my God, what do I have to do to celebrate this woman? How many times can she and I talk? How many times can she and I get together? Because I want to shine a spotlight on her promotion, the work that she's doing for Bremer, the work that she is doing with Bremer in community, and how she is changing the game and the face of banking. And so she is joining us now, courtesy of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Girl, congratulations on your big promotion at Bremer Bank, and thank you for being on the show tonight.
Oh, thank you, Shaletta, for having me and just all those beautiful words that you even said before. You know, I think what you're saying, it's very sobering, humbly. I'm filled with gratitude, and it's not by myself, but it's because of people like you that continue to give those platforms, to talk about people like me that are doing small things. And again, it's not
just me, but it's the people that have given me the opportunity. So Jean Crane, as we think about Women's History Month, a CEO of a bank, there's not very many female women who have that position. And so it's really her and senior leadership that have allowed me to have this platform. So thank you so much for having me on the show.
Now, we have to talk about the promotion that you got to the position of Chief People and Culture Officer. Tell us about that. This is not your first promotion at Bremer Bank. You joined Bremer probably what, 6 or 7 years ago as Director of Talent Acquisition and Diversity. Then you moved on to Chief Talent Acquisition and Diversity. And this is just even a bigger expansion in that role. Talk to me about this new title and this new position.
Sure. Well, in 2017, I was fortunate to join the organization as the first director of talent and DEI. And so in that role, I got to, you know, just really build the foundation of what this work looked like. And then in 2020, like many organizations, we make commitments to do something different and bigger and better and to invest in deeper, richer ways. And so that's what we did. And so not only did I get a promotion, but I was able, again, with the senior executive team and Jean Crane, they invested in other people. So we built that team to do some really significant work in the promises that we made. So again, a lot of organizations were making promises, and we put together an equity action plan that said, here are the ways that we are going to invest in Black and Brown communities. Here are the ways that we want to make impact. And so, you know, in the last 3 years, again, myself, there's been other really amazing leaders that were added to this work, Stephen Spears, Teo Samala, others that really built diversity, some more foundational work, so diversity supplier program, Stephen Spears, and a lot of the work that he's doing around building our products, our services to really serve our communities. And then in just recently, a couple months ago, as we've been expanding our work and strategies to reach people and just to really to grow as a bank, they expanded my role. So because we've got these things in place now, and not that they're isolated or alone, but we're building this into our work. And I got the opportunity to take on all of the people roles, so human resources, essentially, and to really think about what do we do to make continued impact in our culture in the organization, both internally and what are we doing externally. So that's really the scope of my work in this expanded form. And, you know, it's only been, it hasn't even really been a month yet, but already some exciting things in store. So.
Okay. Now you done tease me. What kind of exciting things? You got to give me the scoop. I want to have the exclusive. You know, this news thing is all about who tells it first. So talk to me about some of those new things in this expanded role.
Yeah. So, you know, all of us have to be mindful of who the people are we're serving today and who we're going to serve tomorrow. And we all know that our communities are continuing to grow in representation of who's in the marketplace. And so I would say, as we think about knowing that our organizations will continue to be more diverse, as a brand, we want to be that workplace that people want to work at. We want to be ready to serve the diverse populations that are continuing to grow in our communities. And so that's part of what I get to do in terms of framing up what that looks like. We also know that the talent landscape is it's increasingly more competitive. And so to be that employer of choice, that's what I get to do in terms of, you know, people who aren't with us yet, how do I get them more intrigued to be with us, to be not only at work in financial services, but to work for a bank that is really thoughtful and purposeful in aligning what they do with their mission. And ours is cultivating thriving communities. And so we want to do that in every way possible. And one of those ways that we're very focused on is around our equity work.
Well, I have to say that I am so grateful to you all for answering the call. I know that you are really walking the talk. Because this past October for Disability Awareness Month, I remember I got so angry because I saw, you know, everybody doing these proclamations for Disability Employment Awareness Month, and they were trying to encourage employers to hire people with disabilities. And I was like, you know, I appreciate these proclamations. I really do. But nobody is going to hire somebody because you put out a proclamation. Why don't somebody have a job fair for people with disabilities? And, you know, I'm sitting over here with three kids who have autism. And so I was calling around to the Autism Society and to the governor's office and to county offices, you know, just checking like, hey, thank you for the proclamation. Is anybody having a job fair? Y'all need to have a job fair. People need to work. The employment rate for autistic adults is almost 80%. And, you know, these are not people who can't work. They just can't find opportunities. And nobody was having a job fair. And that just infuriated me that we've got all these agencies. And I just remember being so upset. I had to pray. And then, you know, I felt in my spirit, well, you know, why don't you have a job fair? And I was like, I don't know nothing about having no job fair. I'm a broadcaster. And, you know, I was like, well, I guess it can't be too hard. You get a room, you get some jobs and tell the people to show up. And I remember going to you all at Bremer Bank, and I said, listen, I want to have a job fair for adults and teens with autism. I want you to come and set up a booth, and I want you to talk to people. And if you find some qualified folks, hire them. And I just don't remember y'all saying anything except where you want us to be, how long is the table, and how long will it last? And it was just, I just want to make sure you understand how important it was for our autism community to be able to come to an event where they could have their squishies and be their true, authentic, autistic selves and sit there and talk about a job opening and sit there and, you know, fidget and, you know, not give eye contact and be comfortable enough to talk about their experience and accomplishments and be heard and seen. You know, we had 400 people there that day. Girl, we were sweating and working. And, you know, y'all were there at the beginning and helped us clean up at the end. And everyone was just so grateful.
Well, thank you for having that and for leading that charge. And we wanted to be there. And, you know, the full truth is that as we think about inclusion in the workplace, we all have to be challenged to think about what that looks like. And so that means you have to do things differently. And so, to be honest, we had never been to a job fair that had that focus and purpose. And just because we hadn't been there didn't mean that we weren't going to go. And so we went and we learned and we came back and thought, well, what jobs, how do we do this better? And how do we help managers see people for who they are and for what they offer? And for any job that we have, Shaletta, it is open. But it's more than that, it's open. You have to be presenting, you got to be meeting people, meeting talent, and that talent has to be exposed to our managers and our leaders. And then we have to be challenged to think about what that looks like. And, you know, it's the right person, right job, right fit. And so for us and for our prospective talent, it's about continuing to figure out how do we make those work. Because when you say there's an 80% of folks are unemployed, there's a lot of work out there. And so we have to figure out how to help people get into those places. And we as employers have to figure out what that means for us. So thank you for doing that.
Okay, now I want to keep talking to you because I want to talk to you about building external relationships, this diverse workforce you want to put together, and the Supplier Diversity Program. More with Colette Campbell from Bremer Bank when we come back. It is the Sunday Night Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station, 7:22 in the evening, and it is now pitch black dark. I love it. That means spring is on the way. Summer is on the way, and soon we will be outside with our toes out, but today those toes were chilly. And those toes had socks on them. Those toes were inside boots, and there were flakes coming down out of the sky. Yeah. It's okay. It's okay. The spring weather is on the horizon because that sun is up a little bit longer and it is shining on Colette Campbell. She is over at Bremer Bank. She is making history for Women's History Month and she is joining us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. And Colette, you know, you have been in this role just a little over a month, but you are already doing some amazing things. I want to talk about the fact that you got over to Bremer Bank and you created the first diversity council. What is a diversity council and how is it, you know, changing the culture of your company?
So that's a great question. And so I actually, we've got a leader, Tio Samala, who is on my team and she is the instrumental person who is leading it. What we've done under the team is the council is representative of the people in our organization in the footprint that we serve. So Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota. And they are individuals who have either raised their hand or were nominated to help us move and in the strategies and the KPIs that we've committed as an organization to impact. And so we formed our second kind of cohort. So our first council kind of came off at the end of last year and the new council was formed. In fact, this Tuesday we're having an all day event together. But this council really, you know, has a deeper, I would say, insight of what the strategies are that we want in the organization. So one of them is around representation. So we've made a goal in the organization to look at who we have here today and where we want to go. And so we committed as an organization to double our minority representation in 5 years. And so the council, again, is aware of that. They're helping us to make that charge. We've also committed to establish a diversity supplier program, which again has just kind of stood up. And so it's making awareness of what is that and how do people become involved. And then again, it's about serving the communities and what issues are in the communities that they're a part of. So some of the issues around diversity, equity, and inclusion are going to look different in different parts of our community. So it's going to look different in maybe Minot and Fargo than it does in the Twin Cities. And so that's what we want to be aware of so that our strategy can really be holistic. Because, you know, Shaletta, nobody can do this work on their own. It takes a village. It takes a team. It takes people that are committed and that understand. And so that's what the council does. And I'm excited. It's a new group of folks. I think we've got over 20 and I'm just getting to know them actually. But we had more people raise their hand than we could actually say yes to, which is a good problem to have. We've just got a committed community that want to lean into this work.
And how do you get that buy-in? I mean, you know, I can't get my kids to go to bed on time. And you got a whole group of people raising hands and showing up at autism job fairs that ain't never happened before and wanting to get out into the community and engage young people, which is one of your passions. How do you get folks to do that?
Well, we just show up and we invite them to do that. I'll let you know that last year, particularly as we kind of did a focus on inclusion around folks with different abilities, we had, and actually it was, you know, much thanks to you, you came out and you were a speaker at one of our lunch and learns, and that lunch and learn really created a hunger and desire for our community to talk more about what are we doing with folks with different abilities and with disabilities. And like you being a mother of children with kids that are autistic, we have lots of folks in our community who have family members or have loved ones that they want to see be employed and be included in the workplace and in their communities. And so I think the reason we have so many people interested in this work is because people have signed up, I think, to be a part of our organization because of what we say, that we want to cultivate thriving communities. And so this is just a natural outpouring, I would say, the diversity, equity, inclusion work of our mission of cultivating thriving communities. So that's what I think that is what it's about.
And another thing that it's about for you, I know, is engaging young people. As mm-hmm. the next generation comes up, they want to do podcasts and esports. And so you see in a lot of industries, they're crying mm-hmm. out for engineers to drive the train, folks mm-hmm. to drive the bus or the light rail, folks to climb poles and connect the electricity or cable installers. You are always out and about at events and job fairs for young people talking about banking. And I know for me, I'm 52. I don't ever remember a woman, let alone a black woman, coming to talk to me at a career fair about a career in banking. But here you are, every time there's a career fair, showing up to talk to these young people about careers in banking.
Yeah, it's important. So as we think about Women's History Month, you know, just some fun facts. Columbia University Press has a really great article on black women pioneers in U.S. finance. And so one of the reasons I go out is to not just to share my story, but to tell the story of others. So, you know, in 1903, Maggie Lena Walker, she was born to enslaved parents in 1864. She became the first woman to ever charter a bank. And so Walker was the first woman of any race to charter a bank in the United States, but it was a black woman. And that bank was a powerful representation of black self-help in the segregated South. And so we have to tell these stories. We got to talk about, you know, Lila St. John, who was the first black woman to pass the New York Stock Exchange in 1953. She was a mother of two and she studied for months. And that is important. It's that history. That is what helps people to say, this is why we have to do this. I mean, Shaletta, I don't know how in our lifetime in 1974 or, you know, that is when women could get credit. I mean, that's crazy. That was just in our lifetime on their own. You know, it's important that we are out there so we tell these stories so people understand that it is more recent history than ancient history that we are where we're at, right? And so we got to keep going. And that's one of the reasons I'm out there is to talk about and to talk about the history so that people want a better future and a better present. And to really realize, I mean, not till 1974 could a woman get credit on her own without a man co-signing. That's crazy.
I'm just amazed at how far we've come. And I'm so grateful at how far you are taking us on this journey. Colette Campbell with Bremer Bank, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Shaletta, for having us. And I just really appreciate the work you're doing. And thank you for having me be able to just talk about.
Oh, no, we dropped Colette, but we are so grateful for her coming on the show. And we want you all to stick around. We've got weather. We are going to talk to Jonathan about college hoops and where everybody is landing with regard to March Madness. We're going to go crazy for some basketball up next. All right, it's 7:35. It's Jonathan's favorite time of the year. Hold on, let me put my TV on ESPN, but I really don't need those guys because I've got Jonathan here. ESPN. Jonathan, what is going on with college hoops and basketball? It is about to be March Madness, and we are getting crazy. The first round is on Thursday. What's going on? Who's doing what, and where are we?
Yes, thank you, and you are correct. This is my favorite time on the sports calendar. I have a few of those, but this one tops them all because Thursday and Friday are the two craziest days of the year when you talk about a sport and just the drama and the tension that can happen. And before I move on, let's just not talk about Thursday and Friday. Let's talk about Friday and Saturday, which will be the opening 2 days of the women's NCAA basketball
yes.
tournament. They're just now revealing the seeds. They are almost done revealing the entire bracket as far as the women's tournament goes. But let's go to the men's tournament. Because there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot.
Okay.
This weekend was absolutely crazy when you talk about the seeding for the tournament and the teams that got in. The teams that got into the tournament, usually you have a group of higher at-large teams that are going to be in no matter what happens
right.
in the conference tournaments. You have the
right.
conference champions that are – They have these gaudy records, 27, 28, 30 wins on the season.
Yeah.
And they're the favorites in their conference tournaments in these what are called one-bid leagues to make it through to the tournament. What happened over the past week was a lot of these really highly end top conference champions in these smaller leagues got upset in the tournaments. They got beat in the tournaments by the teams that they weren't supposed to get beat by. And so that left for a lot of head scratching and a lot of rethinking of what the bracket was going to be. And this weekend was a culmination of that. I had a chance, you know, around 60 minutes time to sneak in a little bit of the committee chairman and CBS talking to the committee chairman right after the selection process. And what he said was five teams that were not going to be in the field, that were not scheduled to be in the bracket, won their conference tournaments and got into the bracket that way, becoming an automatic qualifier, which means a bunch of these teams that were, quote-unquote, on the bubble, that were on the edge of making the tournament, got snuffed out, got shoved down the list, and didn't make it because these other teams, like NC State out of the ACC, like Duquesne today out of the Atlantic 10 Conference, like UAB, Alabama-Birmingham from the American Conference, they won their conference tournaments where other teams were expected to win and expected to get through, and that took away spots from other teams.
Okay, tell me this. Were teams just kind of trying to slide in? Were they being lazy? Were the underdogs being extra aggressive? How did that just keep happening? Because, you know, I know sometimes, like in football, if a team knows they're going to a playoff, they arrest their starters and just they know they're going to lose and they're okay with that because of their position. But with the NCAA and the basketball tournament and March Madness, these kids are playing at 110%. Were these underdogs just coming in and blowing everybody's mind and sneaking up from behind? What was going on?
No,
because this kept happening.
This is the beauty of this month. It's the frustration of it as well. But it's a lot of it is the beauty of how this is structured. These conferences all have conference tournaments now, and they all do them a different way. Most of them take all the teams and they go to a neutral site. So, just for matter of fact, the Big Ten tournament this year was held here in Minneapolis for the first time the men's tournament was. And so you had all the Big Ten teams coming here to Minneapolis and playing out the games according to where they ranked in the league rankings. And so Minnesota was technically a host, but, you know, they didn't really rank that high. So they didn't take advantage of their hometown cooking, so to speak. But some of these go to neutral sites. Some of these have the better seeds hosting games all the way up to the championship, and so you get the true home court advantage. Some have better seeds not having to play until maybe the semifinals. So you might have the lower seeds playing in the first round or the second round, and then the better seeds don't play until the semifinals. It doesn't matter if that better team has an off day. If it's a bad, there are bad matchups in basketball. There are teams that have off night shooting. There are teams that have off nights with their aggressiveness and they foul a lot and they get a lot of players in foul trouble. Injuries can occur during these tournaments and they do. And you might have players that are injured a week or 2 weeks ago, which affects the play of that team going into the tournament. They weren't going to be as they're going to be more of a favorite going in, but they lose a key player. And then that really is a bad sign for them going forward. So these teams that have bubbled up and won, it's always happened. You've always had these teams that are capable of pulling off upsets doing so. It's just some years you have more than others, and this year was just in this modern age of basketball, modern age of the college game, it was a historic year for these upsets to happen.
Okay, what's been the biggest upset? What was the one that surprised you the most? And just, I don't know, Jonathan, to me, it just seems like a lot of them. Usually it's like one that everybody's talking about, but it's like five or four or six of them.
Yeah, there were a couple of big ones that happened. Again, NC State winning last night in the ACC championship over North Carolina. They were not going to be in the field if they did not win that game, the Wolfpack, and so they won and got in. The biggest surprise probably from yesterday was Temple out of Philadelphia beating Florida Atlantic, who was a Final Four team last year, national semifinalist last year. They beat Temple beat Florida Atlantic in the American Championship Finals. Florida Atlantic was they were the second seed out of that conference, but they were really the only team slated to go to the tournament. Not even the conference champ in the regular season was slated to go to the tournament in an at-large capacity. So when Florida Atlantic lost, that definitely opened up a spot for one of these other two teams that won. Again, Alabama Birmingham beat Temple today. They get in. If they don't win that game today and Temple wins, Alabama Birmingham isn't going to the tournament. So it was a winner-take-all scenario where you knew if you weren't winning that game, you weren't going to advance to next week.
Okay. I need you to talk to me about how excited you are with how excited everybody else is about women's basketball. I've always gone to women's games. I am a girl. My dad made sure that I went to the women's games. And I just remember sometimes being able to just run through the stadium, you know, because there was nobody there. There was nobody in the chair. So we would just like run up and down the stairs. We would sit wherever we wanted to, you know, and then as I got older and you know, a college a student at the University of Houston, you know, supporting that team and also the Houston Rockets with Cynthia Cooper and, you know, that four-time WNBA championship team and, you know, just being there in that stadium watching those women play. But then, you know, just not having, you know, people that excited about women's sports the way that I'm seeing it now. Like, it's top of the line on SportsCenter. They've got, you know, Sloan Martin and everybody else doing, you know, play-by-play commentary on the games. And, you know, they got the best and brightest. And it's leading the sports news when these teams are playing. And everybody's talking about it, not just on SportsCenter, but online. And the games are full. You know, we had the Big Ten, and every single game was full. Not just the games that Caitlin Clark was playing in. You know, Jonathan, that is different. That is new, and that is exciting for me.
It's extremely exciting, in my opinion. It's been a long, long, arduous road for not just women's basketball, but you look at the growth in women's hockey. You look at the growth in women's soccer. You look at the growth in softball over the past few decades. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's been a long slog. And I hope it continues to grow. We can't just make this the peak. It has to continue to grow on a consistent basis. You've had pockets of women's basketball fervent fandoms. Connecticut has been one. Mm-hmm, Tennessee, yeah. in the Southeast, yeah, has been one. South Carolina has grown their base since Dawn Staley has been there. Iowa has been a good state for women's basketball. Iowa has been a consistent program. Mm-hmm. I am an alum of Iowa State. I know that they had, when I was going to school there, they had great, really great teams, in my opinion. I got really good teams that did fill up Hilton Coliseum, you know, to the 9,000-10,000 fans a game. And they're back kind of to that over the last few years as well. So it's grown in pockets. It just needs to grow more consistently. And Caitlin Clark has been a phenomenal reason and a phenomenal source for that growth to now have a floor.
Yeah.
They what you want to have is a solid floor and move up from there. Hopefully what this season has been with Caitlin Clark leading the way and LSU and South Carolina and Juju Watkins at USC and UCLA and still Connecticut, Paige Beckers, Leah Edwards at Connecticut, hopefully that has set a floor. And that floor can be built upon as we go forward.
Okay, now we're talking about what happened today, what happened in the past with these surprise upsets and who's in and who's out. But when we come back from the break, I want you to tell me who your pick for the Final Four will be and what surprises you expect to see in the tournament for men and women. More with Jonathan when we come back. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. I put up a picture of me and my kids in all green so we do not get pinched. And I tell you, everybody is falling in love with these kids. They are growing up so fast. Jonathan, have you been on social media to see my St. Patrick's Day pictures that I put up with me and all the kids in green?
I can't say that I have. No, I can't.
Get online. Get online. The babies are just growing up. Andrew is as tall as his dad, if not taller. Cameron and I are wearing the same shoe size, and Daniel and Brandon are growing out of control, I tell you. And so folks were just so shocked, you know, because before COVID, it's like, all right, it's 7:35. It's Jonathan's favorite time of the year. Hold on, let me put my TV on ESPN, but I really don't need those guys because I've got Jonathan here. ESPN, Jonathan, what is going on with college hoops and basketball? It is about to be March Madness, and we are getting crazy. The first round is on Thursday. What's going on? Who's doing what, and where are we?
Yes, thank you, and you are correct. This is my favorite time on the sports calendar. I have a few of those, but this one tops them all because Thursday and Friday are the two craziest days of the year when you talk about a sport and just the drama and the tension that can happen. And before I move on, let's just not talk about Thursday and Friday. Let's talk about Friday and Saturday, which will be the opening 2 days of the women's NCAA basketball
yes.
tournament. They're just now revealing the seeds. They are almost done revealing the entire bracket as far as the women's tournament goes. But let's go to the men's tournament. Because there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot.
Okay.
This weekend was absolutely crazy. When you talk about the seeding for the tournament and the teams that got in. The teams that got into the tournament, usually you have a group of higher at-large teams that are going to be in no matter what happens
right.
in their conference tournaments. You have the
right.
conference champions that are... They have these gaudy records, 27, 28, 30 wins on the season.
Yeah.
And they're the favorites in their conference tournaments in these what are called one-bid leagues to make it through to the tournament. What happened over the past week was a lot of these really highly end top conference champions in these smaller leagues got upset in the tournaments. They got beat in the tournaments by the teams that they weren't supposed to get beat by. And so that left for a lot of head scratching and a lot of rethinking of what the bracket was going to be. And this weekend was a culmination of that. I had a chance, you know, around 60 minutes time to sneak in a little bit of the committee chairman and CBS talking to the committee chairman right after the selection process. And what he said was five teams that were not going to be in the field, that were not scheduled to be in the bracket, won their conference tournaments and got into the bracket that way, becoming an automatic qualifier, which means a bunch of these teams that were, quote-unquote, on the bubble, that were on the edge of making the tournament, got snuffed out, got shoved down the list, and didn't make it because these other teams, like NC State out of the ACC, like Duquesne today out of the Atlantic 10 Conference, like UAB, Alabama-Birmingham from the American Conference, they won their conference tournaments where other teams were expected to win and expected to get through, and that took away spots from other teams.
Okay, tell me this. Were teams just kind of trying to slide in? Were they being lazy? Were the underdogs being extra aggressive? How did that just keep happening? Because, you know, I know sometimes, like in football, if a team knows they're going to a playoff, they'll rest their starters and just they know they're going to lose and they're okay with that because of their position. But with the NCAA and the basketball tournament and March Madness, these kids are playing at 110%. Were these underdogs just coming in and blowing everybody's mind and sneaking up from behind? What was going on?
No,
because this kept happening.
This is the beauty of this month. It's the frustration of it as well. But it's a lot of it is the beauty of how this is structured. These conferences all have conference tournaments now, and they all do them a different way. Most of them take all the teams and they go to a neutral site. So just for matter of fact, the Big Ten tournament this year was held here in Minneapolis for the first time the men's tournament was. And so you had all the Big Ten teams coming here to Minneapolis and playing out the games according to where they ranked in the league rankings. And so Minnesota was technically a host, but, you know, they didn't really rank that high. So they didn't take advantage of their hometown cooking, so to speak. But some, like I said, some of these go to neutral sites. Some of these have the better seeds hosting games all the way up to the championship, and so you get the true home court advantage. Some have better seeds not having to play until maybe the semifinals. So you might have the lower seeds playing in the first round or the second round, and then the better seeds don't play until the semifinals. It doesn't matter if that better team has an off day. If okay. There are bad matchups in basketball. There are teams that have off night shooting. There are teams that have off nights with their aggressiveness and they foul a lot and they get a lot of players in foul trouble. Injuries can occur during these tournaments, and they do. And you might have players that are injured a week or 2 weeks ago, which affects the play of that team going into the tournament. They weren't going to be as they were going to be more of a favorite going in, but they lose a key player. And then that really is a bad sign for them going forward. So these teams that have bubbled up and won, it's always happened. You've always had these teams that are capable of pulling off upsets doing so. It's just some years you have more than others, and this year was just in this modern age of basketball, modern age of the college game, it was a historic year for these upsets to happen.
Okay, what's been the biggest upset? What was the one that surprised you the most? And just, I don't know, Jonathan, to me, it just seems like a lot of them. Usually it's like one that everybody's talking about, but it's like five or four or six of them.
Yeah, there were a couple of big ones that happened. Again, NC State winning last night in the ACC championship over North Carolina. They were not going to be in the field if they did not win that game, the Wolfpack, and so they won and got in. The biggest surprise probably from yesterday was Temple out of Philadelphia beating Florida Atlantic, who was a Final Four team last year, national semifinalist last year. They beat Temple beat Florida Atlantic in the American Championship Finals. Florida Atlantic was they were the second seed out of that conference, but they were really the only team slated to go to the tournament. Not even the conference champ in the regular season was slated to go to the tournament in an at-large capacity. So when Florida Atlantic lost, that definitely opened up a spot for one of these other two teams that won. Again, Alabama Birmingham beat Temple today. They get in. If they don't win that game today and Temple wins, Alabama Birmingham isn't going to the tournament. So it was a winner-take-all scenario where you knew if you weren't winning that game, you weren't going to advance to next week.
Okay. I need you to talk to me about how excited you are with how excited everybody else is about women's basketball. I've always gone to women's games. I am a girl. My dad made sure that I went to the women's games. And I just remember sometimes being able to just run through the stadium, you know, because there was nobody there. There was nobody in the chair. So we would just like run up and down the stairs. We would sit wherever we wanted to, you know, and then as I got older and you know, a college a student at the University of Houston, you know, supporting that team and also the Houston Rockets with Cynthia Cooper and, you know, that four-time WNBA championship team and, you know, just being there in that stadium watching those women play. But then, you know, just not having, you know, people that excited about women's sports the way that I'm seeing it now. Like, it's top of the line on SportsCenter. They've got, you know, Sloan Martin and everybody else doing, you know, play-by-play commentary on the games. And, you know, they got the best and brightest. And it's leading the sports news when these teams are playing. And everybody's talking about it, not just on SportsCenter, but online. And the games are full. You know, we had the Big Ten, and every single game was full. Not just the games that Caitlin Clark was playing in. You know, Jonathan, that is different, that is new, and that is exciting for me.
It's extremely exciting, in my opinion. It's been a long, long, arduous road for not just women's basketball, but you look at the growth in women's hockey. You look at the growth in women's soccer. You look at the growth in softball over the past few decades. Mm-hmm. It's been a long slog, and I hope it continues to grow. We can't just make this the peak. It has to continue to grow on a consistent basis. You've had pockets of women's basketball fervent fandoms. Connecticut has been one. Mm-hmm, Tennessee in the Southeast has been one. South Carolina has grown their base since Dawn Staley has been there. Iowa has been a good state for women's basketball. Iowa has been a consistent program. Mm-hmm. I am an alum of Iowa State. I know that they had, when I was going to school there, they had great, really great teams, in my opinion. I got really good teams that did fill up Hilton Coliseum, you know, to the 9,000-10,000 fans a game, and they're back kind of to that over the last few years as well. So it's grown in pockets. It just needs to grow more consistently. And Caitlin Clark has been a phenomenal reason and a phenomenal source for that growth to now have a floor.
Yeah.
They what you want to have is a solid floor and move up from there. Hopefully what this season has been with Caitlin Clark leading the way and LSU and South Carolina and Juju Watkins at USC and UCLA and still Connecticut, Paige Beckers, Leah Edwards at Connecticut, hopefully that has set a floor and that floor can be built upon as we go forward.
Okay, now we're talking about what happened today, what happened in the past with these surprise upsets and who's in and who's out. But when we come back from the break, I want you to tell me who your pick for the Final Four will be and what surprises you expect to see in the tournament for men and women. More with Jonathan when we come back. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. I put up a picture of me and my kids in all green so we do not get pinched. And I tell you, everybody is falling in love with these kids. They are growing up so fast. Jonathan, have you been on social media to see my St. Patrick's Day pictures that I put up with me and all the kids in green?
I can't say that I have. No, I can't.
Get online. Get online. The babies are just growing up. Andrew is as tall as his dad, if not taller. Cameron and I are wearing the same shoe size, and Daniel and Brandon are growing out of control, I tell you. And so folks were just so shocked, you know, because before COVID, it's like everything froze, you know, because we didn't see each other. And so, you know, for 2 years, people didn't see my kids. And so now that everybody's kind of back and we're out in community and we're doing stuff and, you know, they're looking at my kids like they just, oh my, I was like, y'all don't realize 2 years passed. Andrew's driving. So everybody's having a good time looking at these pictures in our green. And Jonathan, you are very knowledgeable. We were very intentional about making sure everybody had green on because nobody wanted to get pinched. Do you have any idea how or why we came up with the if you don't have green on St. Patrick's Day, you get pinched rule? Do you know where that came from? Do you have any insight on that? Because you know that kind of stuff. You have fun facts all the time.
I think I might have heard something at some point in time, but okay. I don't know or remember what that is. I'd have to look it up.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've thought about that.
Okay, because my kids were like, we are not going to church today. We are not getting up. We're not walking out the house unless we got green socks. We got green pocket squares. We got everybody had green on. We looked like we could have just been a singing group. And I said, you know what? We got to take some pictures. We're just too cute not to have pictures. And so I took the picture and posted it on social and just everybody fell in love with the kids all over again and they're green. They are just adorable. So you got to go see it. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm not on TikTok because I don't really have time to do all them dances and stuff. I have a job. And so I'm not on TikTok because I can't take the time to do the dances, but I'm everywhere else. So go and check out my kids because they've just grown and I'm so proud of them and all the, you know, the work that they're doing out in community. And Jonathan, we've been talking about the tournament and who's where and who didn't get in and all the surprise upsets. That's great. But I need you to make some predictions because you studied this. This is your thing. Who do you think is going to be in the Final Four for the men?
So I'm going to start this off with a caveat. I do follow college basketball. I'm not like Joe Lunardi on ESPN or Jerry Palm on CBS Sports, where they are so in-depth to all these different teams.
You're our Jerry Palm, okay?
Oh,
you're the Jerry Palm of WCCO Radio, okay? If I'm going to ask anybody outside of Steve Simpson Steve Thompson, my work husband. Happy birthday to Steve Simpson, by the way. Today is his birthday. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Happy birthday,
no.
Steve Simpson. Yes. Today is his birthday. So that's probably why I said his name, because I needed to tell him happy birthday. But outside of Steve Thompson, You're my strong, solid number two, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm counting on you.
That's what I've always wanted to be, as a number two. Think of Jonathan Lowe as your number two.
A solid number two.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That means something.
Yes.
Not just a regular number two.
Yeah,
it does. Solid number two.
Okay.
So who you picking?
First blush, and keep in mind, looking at matchups and trying to figure this out, this can change over time, because the full, again, as we said earlier, the full bracket doesn't get going until Thursday.
Right.
I don't know if anyone can beat Connecticut out of the East. Connecticut is extremely strong. They got a big presence in the middle. If you can get Donovan Kling in their center out of the game with foul trouble, you got a shot. I think otherwise that they pose too big of a challenge. So I got them coming out of the East. Out of the West, North Carolina's played very well this season. Arizona's been up and down, but Arizona, if they can get a roll going early, I think they have enough talent to get to Phoenix, which would basically be, you know, a couple hours from their home campus. So I'll pick Arizona out of the West at right now. I will give your Houston Cougars some credit. They fell to my Iowa State Cyclones last night, but I think that gives them a reset. I think that gives them a chance to come into this fresh with a chip on their shoulder. I'll take Houston out of the South, and out of the Midwest, that might be your upset region. Purdue, they have one of the best players in the country, but they can be beat. Tennessee has one of the best players in the SEC, but they need help outside of that. And a lot of people like Creighton. Creighton has beaten Connecticut this year in Omaha on their home court. I will take Creighton out of the Midwest. Again, this will change when I really dig a little bit deeper. But for right now, I'll take Connecticut out of the East, Arizona out of the West, Creighton out of the Midwest, and Houston out of the South for the Final Four.
Okay. Who is going to surprise everyone? Who is going to be that team that you think will mess up everybody's bracket?
We just have
to throw them all in the trash. Throw them all in the trash.
I hate this for people out west. St. Mary's and Gonzaga, both from the West Coast Conference. I'm fans of both of those teams, both those programs. Grand Canyon and McNeese look like your 12-5 upsets right now. And then James Madison, you might have three 12-5 upsets. James Madison went to Michigan State at the beginning of the season and beat the Spartans on their home floor. Watch out for James Madison. They're taking on Wisconsin, so they're taking on a regional team.
Yeah.
But that's a team that can really shock some people. And then one other one that you may want to look out for, maybe College of Charleston out of that same area where Grand Canyon and St. Mary's are. College of Charleston's playing really well. Alabama is giving up a lot of points this year, so that could be a region a place to watch out for those type of 12-13 type of upset winners.
Okay, now where will you be placing your bracket? Are you doing it at work? Do you have some friends or y'all?
Are you going online? I'm so skittish on my picks this year. I might just fill one out and not even submit it.
If I do,
I'll do one with the station. I'll do one maybe with somebody else. But as of right now, I see this going one of two ways. Either the top seeds are going to be very dominant and it's going to be a top seed filled Final Four, or you're going to have those top seeds, especially Connecticut. If Connecticut gets knocked off, I think it's a free for all. I think everyone and their mama is going to be jacked up to try to win it.
Ooh, honey, I got to get my blood pressure medicine. This is going to be it. I tell you, we can't wait. March Madness, it is getting crazy. Speaking of crazy, don't get crazy and try to leave us. We've got another hour of the Sunday Night Show coming up on News Talk 830 WCCO. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. I put up a picture of me and my kids in all green so we do not get pinched. And I tell you, everybody is falling in love with these kids. They are growing up so fast. Jonathan, have you been on social media to see my St. Patrick's Day pictures that I put up with me and all the kids in green?
I can't say that I have. No, I can't.
Get online. The babies are just growing up. Andrew is as tall as his dad, if not taller. Cameron and I are wearing the same shoe size, and Daniel and Brandon are growing out of control, I tell you. And so folks were just so shocked, you know, because before COVID, it's like everything froze, you know, because we didn't see each other. And so, you know, for 2 years, people didn't see my kids. And so now that everybody's kind of back and we're out in community and we're doing stuff and, you know, they're looking at my kids like they just, oh my, I was like, y'all don't realize 2 years passed. Andrew's driving. So everybody's having a good time looking at these pictures in our green. And Jonathan, you are very knowledgeable. We were very intentional about making sure everybody had green on because nobody wanted to get pinched. Do you have any idea how or why we came up with the, if you don't have green on St. Patrick's Day, you get pinched through? Do you know where that came from? Do you have any insight on that? Because you know that kind of stuff. You have fun facts all the time.
I think I might have heard something at some point in time, but okay. I don't know or remember what that is. I'd have to look it up.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've thought about that.
Okay, because my kids were like, we are not going to church today. We are not getting up. We're not walking out the house unless we got green socks. We got green pocket squares. We got everybody had green on. We looked like we could have just been a singing group. And I said, you know what? We got to take some pictures. We're just too cute not to have pictures. And so I took the picture and posted it on social, and just everybody fell in love with the kids all over again, and they're green. They are just adorable. So you got to go see it. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm not on TikTok because I don't really have time to do all them dances and stuff. I have a job, and so I'm not on TikTok because I can't take the time to do the dances, but I'm everywhere else. So go and check out my kids because they've just grown, and I'm so proud of them and all the, you know, the work that they're doing out in community. And Jonathan, we've been talking about the tournament and who's where and who didn't get in and all the surprise upsets. That's great. But I need you to make some predictions because studied this. This is your thing. Who do you think is going to be in the Final Four for the men?
So I'm going to start this off with a caveat. I do follow college basketball. I'm not like Joe Lunardi on ESPN or Jerry Palm on CBS Sports, where they are so in depth to all these different teams.
You're our Jerry Palm, okay? You're the Jerry Palm of WCCO Radio, okay? If I'm going to ask anybody outside of Steve Simpson Steve Thompson, my work husband. Happy birthday to Steve Simpson, by the way. Today is his birthday. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Happy birthday,
no.
Steve Simpson. Yes. Today is his birthday. So that's probably why I said his name, because I needed to tell him happy birthday. But outside of Steve Thompson, You're my strong, solid number two, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm counting on you.
That's what I've always wanted to be, as a number two. Think of Jonathan Lowe as your number two.
A solid number two.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That means something.
Yes.
Not just a regular number two. Solid number two.
Okay.
So who you picking?
First blush, and keep in mind, looking at matchups and trying to figure this out, this can change over time, because the full bracket doesn't get going until Thursday.
Right.
I don't know if anyone can beat Connecticut out of the East. Connecticut is extremely strong. They got a big presence in the middle. If you can get Donovan Kling in their center out of the game with foul trouble, you got a shot. I think otherwise that they pose too big of a challenge. So I got them coming out of the East. Out of the West, North Carolina's played very well this season. Arizona's been up and down, but Arizona, if they can get a roll going early, I think they have enough talent to get to Phoenix, which would basically be, you know, a couple hours from their home campus. So I'll pick Arizona out of the West at right now. I will give your Houston Cougars some credit. They fell to my Iowa State Cyclones last night, but I think that gives them a reset. I think that gives them a chance to come into this fresh with a chip on their shoulder. I'll take Houston out of the South and out of the Midwest. That might be your upset region. Purdue, they have one of the best players in the country, but they can be beat. Tennessee has one of the best players in the SEC, but they need help outside of that. And a lot of people like Creighton. Creighton has beaten Connecticut this year in Omaha on their home court. I will take Creighton out of the Midwest. Again, this will change when I really dig a little bit deeper. But for right now, I'll take Connecticut out of the East, Arizona out of the West, Creighton out of the Midwest, and Houston out of the South for the Final Four.
Okay. Who is going to surprise everyone? Who is going to be that team that you think will mess up everybody's bracket?
We just have
to throw them all in the trash. We're just going to have to throw them all in the trash.
I hate this for people out West. St. Mary's and Gonzaga, both from the West Coast Conference. I'm fans of both of those teams, both those programs. Grand Canyon and McNeese look like your 12-5 upsets right now. And then James Madison, you might have three 12-5 upsets. James Madison went to Michigan State at the beginning of the season and beat the Spartans on their home floor. Watch out for James Madison. They're taking on Wisconsin, so they're taking on a regional team.
Yeah.
But that's a team that can really shock some people. And then one other one that you may want to look out for, maybe College of Charleston. Out of that same area where Grand Canyon and St. Mary's are, College of Charleston's playing really well. Alabama is giving up a lot of points this year, so that could be a region a place to watch out for those type of 12-13 type of upset winners.
Okay, now where will you be placing your bracket? Are you doing it at work? Do you have some friends or y'all?
Are you going online? I'm so skittish on my picks this year. I might just fill one out and not even submit it.
If I do, I'll do one.
I'll do one with the station. I'll do one maybe with somebody else. But as of right now, I see this going one of two ways. Either the top seeds are going to be very dominant and it's going to be a top seed filled final four, or you're going to have those top seeds, especially Connecticut. If Connecticut gets knocked off, I think it's a free for all. I think everyone in their mama is going to be jacked up to try to win it.
Ooh, honey. I got to get my blood pressure medicine. This is going to be it. I tell you, we can't wait. March Madness, it is getting crazy. Speaking of crazy, don't get crazy and try to leave us. We've got another hour of the Sunday Night Show coming up on News Talk 830 WCCO.